see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show. My goodness, this is the fourth show already. Time is flying. I must tell you that the weather is just absolutely wonderful this year compared to last. I'm very thankful to the Father for this and for many, many, many other things. I wanted to say to you before we start the show that I ask you to, if you haven't made a donation this year, or if you never have before, or even if you have before, maybe you'd consider giving back and supporting me in this endeavor. With all these shows that I do, I put 6 to 7 shows out a week, and it's a great deal of effort. And I enjoy it, though, but I ask you to give something back. I've been considering going membership on my site because there's too many takers out there that are not giving. There are people that are giving now, and they're nice. I appreciate what they're doing. It's very nice of them. But there's too many that aren't giving anything. They're just taking. And I'm going to give it about 2 months. If I find that people don't want to support my shows and support my work and they just want to keep taking everything for free, then I'll have to try this membership thing. And I really don't know what will happen with this membership thing. You know, I really don't want to do it any more than I want to ask for donations, but I do want to see that people start, you know, helping out. You must understand that there are people that wouldn't be able to afford the membership thing, and that the membership thing would stifle the growth. You know what I mean? So when you help me in my work, you are doing it not just for me, or not just for the kingdom, or not just for the sake of, doing something nice, but to keep helping this stay free for others as well. Hopefully you're spreading the word. Hopefully you're enjoying these shows and getting the most you can out of them. And so that's enough said on that. Sorry I have to even say it, but so many people are just takers in this world. Everything to them is for free, except when they're spending their time and doing work in their time. They want to be paid for every minute. Please have mercy on me, and it won't hurt you to give some money. Maybe you would like to buy a drive with Bertrand Comparé on there, or maybe you'd like the flash drive with a couple of seasons of Saxon's Creed. You can get in touch with me to do that on davidjamesboston@gmail.com. Later in the year, I'm going to put on flash drive my research, where I have things organized in folders so that you can research and learn how to identify Jews, how to identify lots of types of people. Anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on that. I really want to get to the subject matter. Please consider that, though. It would be much appreciated. Okay, we're on page, well, this is 217. I switched over because this is in the Bloodlines of the Illuminati book. When I say Illuminati, I mean Bloodlines of the Jews. Most of these people are Jews. Okay, we're talking about Walt Disney, and I didn't get to read this last paragraph. We were talking last week about the boy who Walt fell in love with, named Bobby, what's his last name? Bobby Driscoll. And Bobby Driscoll ended up becoming a methamphetamine addict at age 17, and he died within just a few years. That's how good the fruits are at Disney. So here's the last paragraph. From those who knew Walt personally, one learns that he had an obsession with the buttock part of the anatomy. He enjoyed jokes about this part of the anatomy, which he told to his staff quite frequently. The staff edited out many of his crude posterior jokes from the cartoon scripts. Two examples that got by the editors are a Christmas special where a little boy is unable to button the drop seat of his pajamas. The little boy's problem in maintaining his modesty is the running gag of the cartoon. In the end, Santa gives him a champer pot. The second example is the paddling machine used on the wolf in The Three Little Pigs. Numerous Disney cartoons feature buttocks as a character of characters provocatively twitching. I saw this with a Betty Boop thing that was incredible. It was, they wanted this guy to join the secret society. And at the end of the cartoon, the secret society was all women and it was all Betty Boops. But she was shaking her butt in that, I remember. So we continue on now this week. So I'm on page 217 of the Bloodlines of the Illuminati. As a witness before Congress, after World War II, Walt Disney was called upon by Hollywood to testify in their defense at the un-American hearings, which were being carried out by congressmen who were concerned about the heavy communist influence within Hollywood. Walt downplayed any communist influence. You'll see why in a second. He downplayed any communist influence in Hollywood to Congress. Interestingly, Walt's father was an outspoken Socialist Party leader in the United States who advocated a socialist Jew world order. He regularly voted for socialist presidential candidate Eugene Debs. One of the first drawings Walt did as a boy was to duplicate the socialist political cartoons he found in a socialist periodical. Appealed to reason that his father subscribed to, I guess that continues. There was no period there. So this periodical was called Appeal to Reason, and his father subscribed to it. When Walt asked in the 1930s how his father felt about socialism's successes, his father, Elias, said, now I know that's an Israelite name, but the Jews stole all those names, right? So that's giving me a little clue, or maybe perhaps a clue. Plus, remember that we don't know who Walt's real mother was either. Today, everything I fought for in those early days has been absorbed into the platforms of both major parties. Did you hear that? His father, who was a socialist, said today, and this is way back then, right? Today, this is the 30s. Today, everything I fought for in those early days has been absorbed into the platforms of both major parties. Now I feel pretty good about that. Thomas Bob, Walt Disney, an American original, page 147 and 148. Walt's movie, Alice's Eggplant, 1925, was pure communist doctrine where the red hen communist leads the working chickens on a strike against Julius, the farm manager, representing capitalists. The strike at Disney and the unionization of Disney in 1940 soured Walt toward communism. The workers at Disney publicly made personal verbal attacks on Walt, and he never forgave the humiliation. In spite of his public distaste for communism, his magic empire, his castle where he was king, was run like a socialist dictatorship, similar to what the Jew World Order plans are. Employees at Disney did not have titles. It was a faceless egalitarianism with an all-powerful dictator, Disney, at the top. It was racially elitist, too. The only full-time African-American, like I care. The only full-time African-American during Walt's lifetime of Disney was a black shoe shine man. Well, that's all they're good for anyway. And then probably not even good at that. Was Walt a socialist of the National Socialist Nazi variety? Of course not. Arthur Babbitt claims, on more than one occasion, I observed Walt Disney and Gunther Lessing there at Nazi meetings, along with a lot of other prominent Nazi-affiliated Hollywood personalities. Now, there's some feller out there. He's a Jew named Ed Chiarini. I mean, he's pretending he's an Italian, but I've seen Jews that look exactly like him, and if you saw his nose and ears, you'd understand very quickly. But he claims that Walt Disney is Adolf Hitler. And so it is kind of funny to see that they're in meetings. Lessing was a mobster, was mobster Willie Bioff's crony. Bioff had spent his time, his earlier days, running a whorehouse before coming to Hollywood for the mob. In the final panel of the Mickey Mouse comic strip 619, 1940, 19, 6, 19, a swastika appeared. Some people have wondered what this other secret signals in Disney's work meant. Disney was not Illuminati. The powerful elite are very skilled at controlling people that rub shoulders with them, those who are beginning to become independently wealthy. For instance, they destroyed Robert Morris, the great financier of the American Revolution. They simply used Hegelian dialectics on Walt Disney. Their unions and the mob made Disney Studio one of their prime targets. In order for, of course, because of the Jews, you got to remember, like, I don't know if he's a Jew, but he was a Freemason. And who got in control of Walt Disney's empire after him?
It was the Jews. It was the Jews, Eisner, etc.
So, of course, they used the Jew-run mob and the Hegelian dialectic and the Jew unions to destroy and take down the empire so they could get it on pennies to the dollar, I'm sure. Walt got help from the FBI and the mob. Walt was vulnerable to the unions. It's all a game. He got help, get it? Because he treated his workers terrible, with long hours, low pay, in addition to repeated abuses to their dignity, Walt's large number of employees essentially never received any credit or recognition for their years of creativity and hard work, which was all essentially stolen and credited to Walt by the establishment to build his image. Now, that is a pure Jewish technique, isn't it? How much music and books and all kinds of things have been stolen, inventions and all kinds of things have been stolen by the Jews, and the people that worked hard receive no credit for it. Those are usually white people. So you see, even if Walt's not a Jew, he sure acts like one. And I wouldn't doubt if he is. We don't know who his mother was. And his daddy's name, Elias. There's a parenthesis here. He says, I write essentially because someone might find some obscure exception. But across the board, Walt got all the credit for what his creative workers produced. Perhaps Walt needed the ego boost from all the purloined public praise which he stole from his staff to be seen as a great animator. Because he had wanted to be an artist cartoonist and failed, the praise helped soothe the wounds. One worker recalls that Walt had no knowledge of draftsmanship. No knowledge of music, no knowledge of literature, no knowledge of anything. Sounds like a Jew. Except he was a great editor. This may not be much of an exaggeration, but Walt was a high school dropout who grew up in poverty on a Missouri farm. Well, if his father was a farmer, then he couldn't be a Jew. Walt's first official attempt to direct a film, and last, was the film The Golden Touch in 1935. The film was an embarrassment. Walt had to pull it from distribution. If Walt lacked abilities to animate and direct, what was Walt's talent? Walt was the driving force, the spirit, so to speak, behind Disney. He was the dictator who was feared enough to demand more from his workers than they knew they could give. And he could get it. He was the driving force that took the mob of artists and gag creators, etc., and shaped them into a powerful force to make cartoons and later movies. He was the hard-driving genius. Genius, remember I said what the definition of genius is? A demon? The spirit behind Walt Disney? Who knew what he wanted? He knew what he wanted, and he got others to create it for him. He was the driving force. What do they call the force? Who do they call the force? That kept an army of costumed sanitation men meticulously cleaning Disneyland. In normal year, Walt would have 800,000 plants replaced at Disneyland, and Walt refused to put up signs asking his guests or visitors not to trample them. How powerful was Walt? Here is a man who, during his lifetime, and even up to the 1990s, had a rule in the studio and Disneyland that no male employees could have any facial hair, yet he himself wore a mustache for most of his life. Let me take a sip of coffee here, folks. It's iced coffee. I love it. A possible chronology of events surrounding Walt Disney's illegitimate birth. Listen to this. Illegitimate birth. Now, that he has that in common with Hitler, perhaps. And Hitler had a mustache. But I don't think Walt Disney was Hitler. It is beyond doubt that Walt Disney was an illegitimate child. But the fact resulted in a long list of mysterious happenings. It also gave power-hungry men something to blackmail Walt Disney with. Because this Chapter 5 on deception is focusing on Disney, and the big boys used blackmail to keep Disney in line, this information is pertinent. The following chronology of events is what the author believes most likely happened. Without any genetic tests, it is difficult to determine beyond a shadow of a doubt who Walt's biological parents were and what the actual history of Walt Disney was. See, this even points even further that he's probably a Jew. I mean, everything about the guy speaks Jew. He's obsessed with butts, playing with little boys. He's a failure at everything, but can be a dictator who can get everybody else to do everything for him and take all the credit for it. See, if you were, this is what I have against plagiarism and plagiarists, is they, if they're going to use your stuff that you have come out with, they should give you credit for it. And see, Walt, like other plagiarists, they just pretend they come out with it. And he pretended that he was doing all this stuff and gave no credit to the people that actually did it. If this doesn't speak Jew, I don't know what does. Anyway, several people, back to the article, several people have spent many years investigating the real facts surrounding his birth. Many interesting and tantalizing clues have been found. This author believes that the following chronology is suggested by the evidence. This author's chronology is offered without hundreds of pages of evidence because the mysteries around Walt Disney's birth are here to stay, no matter what excuses people come up with. And this author doesn't want to stray from the intended purpose of the chapter. This is to show that Walt Disney, listen to this, had a secret bastard birth, which gave J. Edgar Hoover and his superiors blackmail leverage over Walt Disney. He had a secret bastard birth. Bastard is not a square. It means a mamzer. So perhaps Walt Disney isn't even, I don't know, if he's got Jew blood, then he is a beast of the field and he is corrupted and he is an hybrid. Walt may also have had gambling debts. That's another thing. He was a gambler. That's very Jewish. And an abnormal sexual appetite, which also helped entrap him. For most of those who want more evidence and facts, the following are recommended. Almendros, Mojicar, Corner of Enchantment, page 83, Interview Magazine, number 242, Walt Disney was from Almerica. And last but not least, Elliot Mark, Walt Disney, Hollywood's Darkest Prince, chapter. What chapter do you think we should look at? Chapter 11. And this brings me to something very interesting about Jews and Edomites. Donald Trump has used chapter 11 several times, right? Chapter 11 is bankruptcy. It's where you Jew everybody else and don't pay your debts. Chapter 11. I've been meaning to mention that to you for quite some time. But of course, there's no numerical significance to that, is there? 1890. Back to the article. An attractive Spanish woman, Isabel Zamora Asenslo. I don't know how you say it. Ascent. It's like ascending. Asenslo of Mojicar leaves Spain and travels to California to a Franciscan monastery. Okay, so she's not white, that's for sure. In the same year, but later on in 1890, Walt's future father, Elias, who fancies himself a ladies' man, leaves his family to seek his fortune in the gold fields. In California, he meets another newcomer to the state, Isabella Asensio. Oh, he spelt it Asenslo the other way, place, and now it's Asensio. So anyway, Isabella Asensio. And the two newcomers in California have had much in common, have a sexual affair, and fall in love. 1891, Elias fails to make a fortune and returns to Chicago, but he doesn't forget Isabel. 1893, Isabel and Elias have a son, and Elias convinces his wife to accept the baby as theirs rather than have the family's reputation, their marriage, and the family ruined. The son doesn't look like the first two boys at all. 1901, Isabel, so, you know, if Walt's a Jew and she's a Mexican, or whatever you want to say, you see that he's, no wonder he's painting his eyebrows in and everything else and wearing mustaches. Okay. 1901. Isabel and Elias have another bastard son who Elias brings home and names Walter after the minister of the church he attends. The two bastard sons do not look like the older sons of Elias, and they never have much to do with them, but cling to each other as brothers. 1903, the minister of the church Elias attends finds out about the bastard children, and Elias quickly moves out of the state so that the scandal will remain secret. Elias has also run up gambling debts, which makes me think he's a Jew, too, the father there. 1905, moving toward Marceline, Missouri, Isabel is hired at Disneyland as Disney's maid, so that she has an excuse to move in with them without creating suspicion. She probably does much of the raising and care of the two boys. How quaint. 1918, J. Edgar Hoover is busily involved with the prosecution of draft dodgers in World War I, and it crosses his desk about the case of Walt Disney committing the crime of forging his parents' signatures to join the army. Cases like Walt's were watched because people who could be blackmailed could be resources in the future for Hoover. That year, Hoover was a homosexual. You wonder why he's named after a vacuum? Sorry for the poor humor. That year, Walt discovered that he had no birth certificate. Walt observes his parents' strange reactions concerning his birth certificate and other questions, and begins to deeply distrust his father. November 1938, there's 9/11 right there. 1 times 9 is 9, 3 and 8 is 11. Walt's mother dies by gas. Would she eat a lot of beans or something? I'm kidding. Walt's mother dies by gas, and the Disney maid pulls Elias to safety from the fumes, but Walt's mother dies. 1939 and 40, Hoover offers Walt Disney to help Walt locate his real parents if Walt will work for the FBI. Either Hoover already knows who he is, or knows that he is a bastard child, or he soon learns the truth from an investigation. This gives Hoover blackmail power over Walt Disney and assures Hoover that Walt will be loyal. Hoover informs Walt Disney of the truth and then moves to generously protect Disney and his father's reputation. Two FBI men plant baptismal information of a child born to Isabel in 1890 named Jose Guirao in Mojicar, Spain. That's probably not how you say that, Mojo. Well, Mojicar, I guess, whatever. This date is 10 years off of Walt's birth date and is intended to throw people off track. They can't plant a fake birth certificate for Walt in the records for 1901 because everyone knows from World War I that none exists. Therefore, they plant a fake birth certificate for Walt in the Illinois state records in the year 1890. They hope people will think that somehow a filing error occurred. This way, if anything leaks, and worse came to worse, Walt could at least pretend he was adopted and not an illegitimate bastard child. They pay off townspeople in Mojicar to tell a particular story. Townspeople probably receive ongoing payments. Let me just stop right there. Can you say Sandy Hook? People, you know what cracks me up is people say, well, how is that possible that, you know, the school was shut down? I told you about all the mortgages being paid off in one day. Hello? Nobody died at Sandy Hook. Get it? It's a hook, Sandy Hook. Listen, this is the technique right here. Walt could at least pretend he was adopted and not an illegitimate bastard child. Listen carefully, Nashab. They pay off townspeople in Mojicar to tell a particular story. Townspeople probably receive ongoing payments. Ka-ching. 1941, Walt confronts his father with the truth and his father commits suicide. And his real mother comes to live with him as his maid. 1954. In order to reinforce the myth that Walt was born in Spain, a group of Franciscan monks goes to Mojácar and visibly inquires about the birth records of José Guirao and or Walt Disney. They spend time with the mayor and make sure that everyone connects Walt Disney with José, Joseph, who is a fictitious nominal character that the FBI has created records of. See, in seeing this and reading this to you, do you now see how things are done? Do you now see that when I say the FBI is foreign by Israel and that they're complete liars and they're useless to the American people, this is not something that's doing the American people any good at all? The FBI is a tool used against the American people and against the kingdom of Yahweh. 1967, a year after Walt's death, a large group of Americans, a large group was needed because they are not skilled like the two FBI men in 1940, pretend to be on official business, quote-unquote, for the American government. They go to Mojácar, Spain, now he spells it different this time, to destroy all the records of José Guirao to ensure that there will be no Spanish claimants to Walt Disney's fortune. Later, to ensure the fictitious story. So let me ask you a question. A large group of Americans. Well, how did they shut up a large group of Americans during a false flag psyop? Why, they buy them off. Just like we saw before, just a little while ago here. People say, well, how can they get everybody to shut up? Well, let me tell you one of the techniques of the mafia. When a mafia family gets killed, the mafia takes care of that family. And the fellow gave the reason why. It's not because they love all of their family. It's to keep their mouths shut. Now, they could just kill them all too, right? But that wouldn't go over well, would it? It wouldn't look good. It wouldn't be good publicity or PR. So here you are in 1967, a large group of Americans was going over there to destroy records. To listen, just listen to this. This group of people go to, I don't know why he changed, it's Mojácar, not Mojácar. Who the hell knows what's going on here? They go to Mojácar, Spain, to destroy all the records of José Guirao to ensure that there will be no Spanish claimants to Walt Disney's fortune. Later, to ensure that the fictitious story is solidly in place, to mislead a few people who might get by the cloud of secrecy over Walt Disney. The Spanish government does a favor to certain powerful people and pays an investigator to investigate the Spanish origins of Walt Disney. People of the village willingly tell people without any fear or without any fanfare that Walt Disney was born at their village. Unless they have recently done so, the village has never done anything, no monuments, no markers, or anything about the birth site of Disney. They probably didn't do this for years because some of the village probably knew it was a lie. With the older people gone, the lie has probably become well entrenched as truth, and there is more likely some type of memorial to Walt Disney. See, this is exactly what's going on. I mean, with Sandy Hook and all these different false flag things, people are paid. Remember, let me just jog your memory for a moment. When they just did this New Zealand fake psyop shooting, one of the fellows, there was two people with this fellow, and one of them went to Israel. The guy that did the shooting in the video, he was at Israel before, shortly a month or two before he did this shooting, so-called shooting. What did we find out after? That the people of the mosques got reparations. Hush, 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 two in the brush. You understand? You see the technique again? It's just like it is here. So if you wonder how they can keep Sandy Hook shut up, how would you like to shut your mouth so your mortgage was paid off? That might shut your mouth, huh? Of course, I can't be bought off. I don't know about you. But some people can be bought off. This whole crowd, large group of Americans was bought off here. The people in the town were bought off. The government of Spain was bought off. I mean, come on. How can they keep little Sandy Hook? Well, everyone's mortgages were paid on one day. And you can tell there's something wrong with it because they still defend it to the hilt. They don't want anybody looking in, just like they don't want anybody looking into the fable of the Holocaust. They don't want anybody looking into the fable of Sandy Hook. It's another of the fables of the Jews. And if you do look into it, they will try to penalize you severely. Walt Disney's character, back to the article. Because the Disney deception is such a major Illuminati Jewish deception worldwide, and because Walt Disney was the major catalyst behind all the Disney theme parks, movies, trinkets, etc., it is of importance to examine his character. In studying historical figures, this author has tried to get to the rock-bottom truth. One may ask, how can this be done? Especially since there have been decades of myths spread about the establishment and their media, by the establishment and their media. And who is the establishment and their media? Why, it's the Jews. You know, the Illuminati. Remember what I told you about the word Illuminati? The two L's on 11 and I is the ninth letter of the alphabet. 9-11 is right in the word Illuminati. Remember I told you that? That the Father gave me that right before I was doing a fireside chat and I began to laugh? So, continuing, the following procedure, which has worked with other historical figures, was also done by this author with Walt Disney. The first part of this author's own procedure is to study everything that one can find on the man, paying special attention to what bias and vantage point other authors come from. Special attention is also paid to biographers who try to give the whole truth as they have found it, rather than approved biographies that repeat myths, platitudes, and flattery. The investigator has to be careful because there are authors who deceptively say in their introductions that they are detached investigators, quote-unquote, who are going to be painfully honest in their reporting, quote-unquote. You get it, like Honest Abe Lincoln. Why would they have to give his name as Honest Abe? You'd only do that to some kind of shyster car salesman, Honest Joe's Car Sales, right? See, that should have been a clue to you and me and everybody else that they called him Honest Abe. So, they say they're going to be painfully honest in their reporting, when actually our skillful cover-up artists for the person they write about. When your author, Fritz Springmeier, finished investigating written material about Walt Disney, then I mentally placed what I knew on the shelf temporarily and did a handwriting analysis based on the scientific principles of graphoanalysis, as well as the broader field of graphology. This author is certified as a graphoanalyst. Yes, I have a book by Fritz Springmeier that is very interesting that I don't think anybody's ever heard of. I hope to get to it someday. So Fritz has done this handwriting analysis professionally. Using graphoanalysis or graphology is an excellent way to get an unbiased, very deep look at a historical figure. It is a way to bypass all the propaganda and myths. However, a close historical look of the handwriting analysis of various historical figures have always matched each other, and they did in this case too. Here is what was found. The following paragraphs are how Walt was in the 1920s. The personality profile you will read did not endure. Under the pressure of micromanaging Disney Productions, as well as the living with the financial stresses, by the 1940s, Walt could be found in rages, giving rough treatment to his wife and rough spankings to his two children. He went to psychiatric counseling to cope with the stress, and unfortunately, with the progression of time, by the 1960s, Walt had become a sadistic, egotistical alcoholic. One biographer described him as a bully and a know-it-all. Even then, Walt had been working for him, such as Bill Walsh, who had been an orphan as a child, who worshipped Walt. But here is how he was in the 1920s. You see, there's something about orphans that the Jews like to pick on people like, or they like to get them into Freemasonry. An orphan child has no parents to protect him. He's vulnerable in the world. They love orphan children because there's nobody to care for them, so they can take them and do what they will with them. Walt was, back to the article. Walt was a self-motivated individual with lots of energy, which was constantly seeking some outlet. People have written much about this trait of his. He was more the giver than the taker in relationships. In the first few years, when he was responsible for making business contracts, he often gave away his work without setting prices for profits. He even wrote letters to his boss to the effect that his priority was good cartoons, not profits. Well, that's very un-Jewish. And that he'd work without profits. But he did want some appreciation for his work. That was his sensitive nature showing. Walt wouldn't wait for others to come up with an idea or someone else to make a movie. He was there first. He could communicate his ideas with clarity and ease and move easily from one idea to another. He would storm into Disney Productions and spew one idea after another into his workers' ears. He enjoyed competition. He had a quick mind and a keen perception. He frequently acted on intuition and impulse, taking chances and endangering his own security. He frequently gambled all his life savings and everything he could scrape together on a project. Long projects bored him. Fortunately, the real tedious work of cartooning was done by a large staff of artists. House chores and repetitive chores bored him, and he avoided them. He was absolutely a total slob around the house as a bachelor. He was impatient with vague philosophies, and he liked concrete realities. He was difficult to get along with, and because... Let me see here. I kind of lost that for a second. He was difficult to get along with. Where is that? Sorry. There it is. Sorry. I have to just move the page a little bit now. He was difficult to get along with because he had both a playful side, even to the point of cruel practical jokes, to his personality and an aggressive, intolerant, impatient side that wanted to achieve. Naturally, people around him were disconcerted because on the subconscious level, they never knew which side of him they would deal with. Yeah, I can identify with that. The reference series, Current Biography, Disney, quote-unquote, article page 248, gives the following Walt Disney quote. Listen to this careful if you could. "We don't even let the word art be used around the studio. If anyone begins to get arty, we knock them down." He was geared for action. He was always inventing ways to get what he needed. He could be explosive when provoked. The old-time associates of Walt remember his explosive temper. He was a person of dynamic energy, sensuality, and keen thinking, and a disciple of the pleasure principle. He was a disciple of the pleasure principle. He's a hedonist. Would you mind if I just take a quick sip here? Continuing, because his father was so abusive and misused his position of authority, Walt came to be deeply ingrained with defiance toward authority. The themes of his films repeatedly sympathize with those who rebel against authority. Hello. Can you say Saul Alinsky? Can you say Lucifer? Unbelievable. The themes of his film repeatedly sympathize with those who rebel against authority. And no wonder the Jews loved him. And the police and other authority figures are consistently shown as absurd. One way he expresses irresponsibility was with lively dance scenes, which has been a hallmark of teenage rebellion during the 20th century. Comic anarchy reaches its fullest expression in Alice Rattled by Rats, which shows what the rats do when the cats go away, or when the cat goes away. He felt the rules were for others to follow. That's very Jewish of him, isn't it? That is sort of one reason he would step outside the law and commit illegal acts. This is one trait that might be responsible for some of the criminal activities Walt ended up participating in. Walt also didn't like to be closely supervised. He wanted to manage the Disney Magic Kingdom as if it were his own kingdom. He wanted to be an authority figure and indeed became the dictator of his Magic Kingdom. When his workers differed with his own views, he felt that they were infringing upon his own inalienable rights as an individual. He was somewhat of a melancholic temperament, that type of perfectionist who still enjoys life. He felt a need to protect himself against intimacy with others. He was the most at home in a setting which he made for himself. Walt had the traits of an executive. He was slow to reveal his innermost feelings and definitely set his own goals. Walt was one of those persons that when the going got tough, he hung in there. Likewise, he would cling to his ideas, plans, and possessions. His stubborn refusal to allow his brother Roy to stop the creation of Disneyland led to events that split the brothers. His determination to succeed was taken advantage of by the crime syndicates, to blackmail him with some debt. In order to get his dreams, he was willing to give them what they wanted. A clue to Walt's macabre sense of humor, at the time, almost a graveyard sense of humor, and his high tolerance of seeing pain in others, is that Walt was secretly thinking of volunteering again as a medic after World War I. Fighting in France was over. When the volunteers were needed for the Balkan fighting, Walt loved animals more than people. The only human being that he had rapport with while growing up on the farm was his Uncle Ed, who he called Uncle Elf. Hello. The Elven Way, remember? Who looked like a cross between a leprechaun and a prune. Uncle Elf could make animal sounds and bird whistles to Walt's delight. Walt loved the charm of the farm, that's a nice title, and nature, and he loved royalty, pageantry, and a strict social hierarchy such as Freemasonry provides. He often wove a combination of a barnyard with royal parades and other trappings of royalty. For instance, in Alice the Piper, the King Hamlin is a farmer who sleeps in a farmhouse. In Puss in Boots, the local king lives in the authentic palace incongruously placed in a village. His early film, Alice's Day at Sea, includes... He likes the Alice a lot. Did you notice that? Alice in Wonderland, Alice the Piper, Alice's Day, you know, on and on and on and on. Alice's Mysterious Mystery, Alice Foils the Pirate. Oh, it must be an ongoing character, obviously. His early film, Alice's Day at Sea, includes both the features of a royal court and an American circus. In typical Disney disdain for authority, he pokes fun at criminal fraternal groups with their rituals and passwords in Alice and the Dog Catcher, Alice Foils the Pirates, and Alice's Mysterious Mystery. And while he was a secret FBI agent, he went against Hoover's wishes and poked fun at the FBI's authority. Walt was loyal to what he believed and could be loyal to those individuals who he deemed worthy of his loyalty, but he didn't want anyone to have authority over him. Walt was a 32-degree Freemason and an occultist. Now, I heard he made it to the 33, but maybe he didn't. He was loyal to that philosophy and loyal in his early years to his older brother, Roy O. Disney, who was a father figure to him. If anyone at the studios agreed with him when he was angry at his brother Roy, or he or she risked losing their job. Both brothers were protective of each other and felt that they were the only ones that could criticize the other one. Notice that if Walt made it to the 32nd degree, he was illumined. And when you reach the 30th degree, you're told who the light is that you've been seeking all along. And you know who the bright one is, right? The light bringer. Huh? Lucifer. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy and Ricky. Well, we're on Who Was Roy O. Disney? I don't know if we can finish this before the end of the show or not. Probably not, but we'll try. We're running out of time. Roy O. Disney was born in 1893, and his brother Walt was born in 1901. They had three other brothers, but Roy and Walt, 1901 to 1966, were only close to each other and not to their other brothers because, of course, they were hybrids who didn't resemble their other brothers. They probably hated their white brothers, if they're white. Walt was named Walter Elias. His middle name was derived from his father's first name. The Disney family had immigrated from Ireland to Canada and then to the U.S. The father of the brothers, as stated, was Elias, and their mother was of Scottish descent, who may not have been the biological mother. She had the maiden name of Flora Call. Roy died in 1971, shortly after the opening ceremonies for Walt Disney World. He kept his promises to his brother to build Walt Disney World. He reneged on his promises concerning the city of Epcot, which was derailed into becoming Epcot, which is all uppercase. I guess that's the difference. Roy O., during the 1930s, lived in North Hollywood. Roy's family later located in Napa Valley, California, and was associated with the Jewish kingpins in the area. Napa Valley had been nicknamed the Valley of Kings. This quote-unquote alleged Valley of Kings plays a major role in the dirty activities revealed in this chapter. Roy O. Disney played a bigger role at Disney Studios than people realize. For example, it was Roy O. who made the decision to cut 45 minutes out of Fantasia, 4 and 5 is 9, hello, so that Walt's pet project could be distributed to movie theaters. Roy O. considered by some insiders as the more evil of the two brothers, kept the financial books for the Disney's down through the years. It is known that Disney kept two books during the 1950s, so it's hard to believe anything except that Roy O. was fully aware how Disney brought in their money. The big boys always kept the financial screws to Walt and Roy. The big boys often figured out scams to take their money. When the Disney brothers had an arrangement with the Columbia Studio, ruled by Jews, right? By Harry Cohn. They were advanced $7,500 each for each cartoon, which cost them an unprofitable $13,500 to make. Further, Cohn liked to cheat them by not sending them money and taking a ridiculous amount of time to pay them what he owed them. That's very Jewish of Mr. Cohn, isn't it? The cash flow problems of the Disney brothers also came from Walt's desire to keep improving and upgrading the technology they used. When Walt went to color over Roy's objections, Disney's profit margin was damaged by the studio, and the studio was left with shortages of cash. In 1937, Walt's repeated gambles with cartoon production ideas caused Roy O. to say, "We've bought the whole damn sweepstakes." From 1940 through 46, Disney lost money every year. In 46, he lost $23,000. Finally, in 47, things turned around and the Disney studio made a profit of $265,000. Cartoons and movies were not really big money makers for the Disney brothers until it was realized that old films could be replayed on television. Overall, the 20s through the 50s, the Disneys may have broke even with animation. This is why Disney Studios at Christmas 1931 was unable to pay its payroll. Pinocchio cost $2.6 million to make in the late 30s, an amount that was hard to retrieve at that time from the box office, and Fantasia's original release in the 40s was a dismal financial failure. When Sleeping Beauty was released in 1960, it was a loser. Moviegoers were apathetic towards it. The real money made by the Disney brothers in the 30s and through the 50s came from merchandising of Disney products, the production of underground hard porn, and the kickbacks from the various groups which used Disney for mind control programming and money laundering. When Walt died, his shares in Disney were worth $18 million. Hello, 18. His family all held 34% of the stock in Walt Disney Productions. Roy O. Disney's daughter, Dorothy Disney Pewter, and husband, Episcopalian Reverend Glenn Pewter, purchased property at 1677 Sage Canyon Road, Napa Valley, east of Rutherford. This is close to the Rothschilds' Opus 1 Temple mentioned in Volume 1. O.J. Simpson's lawyer, Johnny Cochran Jr., was in the Rothschilds' hard-to-enter Opus 1 when the jury arrived at a decision in the O.J. Simpson's case. It's very typical for the mafia families in South Boston to have one family member in the clergy and one full-time in organized crime. See the authors Be Wise as Serpents for an expose on the Episcopalian Church, which is simply a branch of Freemasonry. All kinds of interesting mafia figures, Illuminati and Bohemian Grovers, live up in Sage Canyon Road. This is an area that is a large, well-kept cemetery for pets. Frank Wells' sister and Rich Frank, who will be discussed later in this chapter, also live on Sage Canyon Road. We'll continue next week with E, who was Roy B. Disney. Very interesting. I hope you enjoyed the show. I certainly learned quite a few things here. I hope you did too. Let me give you a little good piece of advice as we leave the show together. Don't go down the wrong hole.
They never wanted me.
Just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste, all the lines that they told erased. A man without a face, a man without a face, a man. A man without